Yeah, which, like I said, I guess that's how you, is that how bands get big now? I don't know.
Yeah,
you're in a band, is that how you get big?
That's considered making it now, I believe.
I see.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Black Market Toast podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something completely new. This is episode number 87, and we'll be jumping off of Manchester Orchestra's Mean Everything to Nothing. This is their second full album, and it came out in 2009. Joe, did you watch the videos or just listen to the album?
I didn't watch the videos. I just listened to the album, which I actually really enjoyed.
Yeah, it's I enjoy this band a lot. We went with this one because of the video components. But you know, whatever. Actually,
what were the video components?
Well, it's just that you know they made a basically a long form. Kind of video with every song. Every song kind of played a piece into the long form video for the entire album.
Okay.
Which was kind of cool. But it was the tiebreaker for their first album or their second album. And, yeah.
Gotcha.
This is from 2009. Their first album was in 2006, which was, peak the height of the popularity for like Paste magazine, which is where I first heard them. They're a indie rock band out of Atlanta.
Which is that's an area that I now know, sort of. That
you now know better than you used to.
Unfortunately.
And actually I apologize for the scheduling wonkiness because, Joe's in a new area and we're trying to figure this thing out. So
Atlanta, oddly enough.
Yeah, he is oddly enough in Atlanta.
I knew nothing of this band. I'm not sure why. Like, I'm sure I've heard I had heard the name before. I had never listened to their music before, ever.
I've said the name to you before and said, we'll listen to them on a later episode. I don't know if that's the first time you had heard of
no,
them or what.
No, I had heard it through different, I don't know. I think I've just heard people talk about the band. I maybe have heard, they're playing around here, but I had never just actually listened to the band.
And they've done like Lollapalooza and stuff like that. Fairly big on the indie rock scene, but there is no there's no radio airplay for that, so there's not really really a means for discovery unless you seek it out with anything on the rock end of the spectrum now.
I really think that the rock station back in Greenville is playing the same songs they played when I was in high school.
They have not progressed past new metal is the furthest forward they go. Occasionally they'll throw in some Imagine Dragons, but one band is not the case make.
No, not at all. I'm actually happy because they're from Atlanta. So now maybe I can catch them when they play around here. Cause I'm assuming they're going to play around here more frequently than normal.
They every Thanksgiving, they do a thing they call the stuffing. They do a big kind of festival thing where it's them and a bunch of other bands play. They'll at least be there for that. They're touring nationally now. This was the second of their three album deal with a major label, and they've done those three albums, and they just put out their first one basically as an independent entity without the major label influence, and they're touring to kind of promote that at this point. So
and that's always a good spot to get in for a band, because now you've kind of retaken control of your own creativity and your own output, and
right.
you're it's it really will let a band kind of free themselves in both a literal and an artistic sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they had actually made a complete album in 2005 before they signed the deal, and that album got completely scrapped.
I'm guessing they maybe re-released it.
It has leaked out, but I don't believe it has officially been re-released per se. But yeah, I have a copy of it.
Legal and non-nefarious means,
right?
Disclaimer.
A couple of the songs have made it forward into they came out with an EP first and then the first album, and a couple of songs made it forward into that, but the bulk of that album was just never released.
So it's just a thing that they will occasionally play at concerts to please the hardcores,
I guess.
Some bands have that. That's not actually uncommon, which is sad a little bit in the record music industry that, you know, bands have whole albums that just never see the light of day. And then it sort of leaks out to the hardcores. And then it kind of becomes a badge of honor to have. Well, not really like a badge of honor to have it, but kind of a, you know.
Well, it used to be a badge of honor to have it.
Yeah.
Because you used to have to track down, you know, an old copy. Like when, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers came out with Out in L.A., which was just B-sides and rarities, which nowadays is not even a thing.
Right.
But and it was called Out in L.A. because you could buy it at the little underground shops in L.A., but you couldn't get any of it anywhere else. So yeah, it's stuff that anybody in LA had been listening to for years, but it came out after Blood Sugar Sex Magik hit as kind of the B-sides and rarities. Hey, you guys can listen to this stuff too.
Nice.
Also known as the label cash grab.
I don't know. The music industry does suck so bad. And it really does seem like I'm not sure if it's better now that like you don't sell physical copies of albums per se anymore, or if it's worse now because now the labels are finding new and creative ways to make money off of people because they're not selling physical copies of things.
Well, the labels are preying on fewer people, and they are only pulling in those that fit into their formula of what they can make automatically into something a hit. So you end up seeing a lot of the same cookie cutter pop over and over again, and you know anything new and innovative just never gets picked up, and so. You know, all these bands there's a lot of bands that are big on their local or regional scene, and never get picked up for anything further. So there's not really, you know, there's not really the chance for like a Seattle type explosion onto the mainstream, because, you know, while there is international distribution at our fingertips, there is the means of discovery is not there. It's distribution, but it's not being marketed to the masses.
Right. It's a lot of the same stuff that we bitch about the movie industry of, you know, they're only going for the blockbusters now. They're not taking risks and introducing new stuff and trying to, you know, freshen things up. It's just
but more at least of the same stuff. You have like your Netflix and your Amazon Prime picking up some of those independent films, you know, going to Sundance, picking up a film and simultaneously releasing it in the theater and on Netflix at the same time. And so there is somewhat of an outlet for the independent film, more than there is for the independent musician. But you know, you can make a comfortable living as a regional artist, if you put in the work and you catch on, it's just there's not the chance for, you know, mega stardom that there used to be.
That's, well, yeah, and that's true. I guess it's, because, I mean, really, bands make money touring. You know, that's right. Kind of always been the thing, but now I think it's even more so, mm-hmm. You know.
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, basically, you're trying, your goal is to be discovered on a platform that pays you thousandths of a cent per listen.
Yeah.
And that is what you have to strive for to build an audience enough to be relevant.
Right. Tour and actually make money.
Right. So yeah. It went from, well, you don't make any money off of your albums because the record industry takes a cut, to you don't make anything off your albums because nobody does.
Yeah.
Well, except, you know, and I don't know if, you know, and Spotify's only making $7 a month off, you know, however much they're charging people now.
Right. Yeah, per, I mean, Amazon makes $9 a month off me.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like they're getting that $15 for the listens, you know. They're not getting that $15 for you to have that CD.
Right, it's funny. It's almost like they what was the music service that you signed up for where you could
E-music?
No, the old school one where you would actually pay and then like buy CDs from them.
Columbia House.
Huh?
Yeah, Columbia House.
Columbia House. It's almost Columbia House, except you're only buying one album a month for $9.99. Uh-huh. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the pre-Spotify era, I had like E-music. Like I said, was basically it was like $10 a month. And you could download like up to 80 songs, I think, which worked out to, you know, 4 or 5 albums every month that you could download. And that was the predecessor to Spotify. And it, you know, and that was a smaller cut than the industry was used to, but it's gone even further to the extreme on that.
Right. Right. Which is, I mean, it's bad for artists, but I mean, in some ways it's good for artists because now I don't have to buy this album, I can listen to it and then like the band and then go see them.
Right. And you're not having to pay back a $3 million advance on distribution of your album.
Exactly.
But at the same time, you're putting it into Spotify, which is just a big ocean of music. And saying, hey, you know, somebody noticed me. And, you know, you have to, in order to play the Spotify game, you almost have to try to build relationships with curators of playlists. And there are popular playlists that people go to draw their new music from. And if you get onto one of those playlists, then that's where your boom comes from. And that's when you actually start making money.
Right. Yeah. Because they, I have it on Amazon. It'll be the hot new music for, right. You know, whatever, and then whatever genre that you decide to pick.
Uh-huh.
You know. Good, I'm glad I'm not the only one with random stuff going on in the background.
Yeah, but Spotify kind of has, you know, the user-generated playlist, and basically they have, like, the Instagram model of the influencers, you know?
Right, which, yeah.
Where, you know, you have people who curate these playlists, and these playlists have tens of thousands of followers. So if you get added onto there, you get all those listens added in because you're in that playlist.
Right. Right.
And then if you get enough plays there, then you end up in their New Music Weekly and the Spotify curated ones.
Yeah, which, like I said, I guess that's how you, is that how bands get big now? I don't know.
Yeah,
you're in a band, is that how you get big?
That's considered making it now, I believe.
I see.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So, I guess we can actually talk about the music. Andy Hall is the lead singer, is actually the son of a preacher. So, I don't know. And a lot of his lyrics are based in there's Christian bases in there. And I, you know, when that comes up in music, I kind of latch onto it, but I tend to skew towards the anti point of view. So I don't know if I interpret his songs correctly, because I kind of have a negative preconception coming in. So I don't know. And there's more on like Aversion, Losing a Child is their first album, which is an obvious religious reference. But like there's a line in there that's a disaster is a disaster no matter what Christian language you drag it through. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are definite, you know, condemning towards modern Christianity, if not towards the faith as a whole. And, you know, growing up in the Southeast, it's relevant. And, you know, it's right down the road. So it's all content that resonates as relevant, to me locally. And that's lyrically, and I may draw a little bit of inspiration from them lyrically when I write. but also on this album, like they play around with time signatures a little more than you would expect from a major label release.
Which is nice. As a music nerd, I appreciate that and enjoy it.
Yeah, there's at least one song in there that is either all triplets, it's in 3/4, or it's in 6/8. One of those three. Yeah. it's basically a waltz. You know, your mainstream rock is basically 4/4. But it adds a little bit of interest and a little bit of kind. It plays with your ear when you play with the time signatures a little more like that.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's nice. It's it definitely freshens things up. It makes it a little more interesting to listen to. It keeps it from kind of fading into background noise, which is a problem I have a lot of new records that I listen to.
Yeah. Oh, this is all the same, but yeah, they vary tempo. They vary time signature. They vary dynamics. It's enough of a not a monotonous thing that it grabs your attention.
Right.
Did you have any favorites or any highlights off the record?
I was trying to think. The first song was nice. It hits really hard, kind of coming out of the gate, which I appreciate that. I was trying to think. I liked $100, but that was a good one.
Yeah, that was just straightforward.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's just how it was.
It's kind of funny, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, Shake It Out is good. It's good to listen to. I was trying to think. I think those were the three that I really... Oh, and Pride. I did enjoy Pride.
I love Pride.
Yeah.
I like Pride and I Can Feel Hot One because, you know, I like some of the more mellow stuff.
Right. Yeah, once it got to that part of the record, I started kind of getting up and doing other stuff. I was like, okay, it's kind of... It's fading in a little bit to the background and I don't know. I do enjoy the hard hitting, straightforward stuff.
Yeah. But Pride is hard hitting, but more complex. It has, you know, it doesn't remain in the same rhythm throughout the whole song. It has breaks and complete changes in feel, and I appreciate that.
But yeah, it's like I said, I'm enjoying the record. I will actually probably start listening to more of their other stuff now that I've kind of started wading into that pool. It was one of those things when I first heard, I'm like, okay, this is definitely an indie band. They sort of have that. I'm not saying they all sound the same, but they definitely have a certain sound.
Yes.
That was some of it is sort of punkish. Some of it is very kind of standard rock.
Yeah.
But the intentional lack of polish to the sound is that kind of is the hallmark of indie music.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, and this is when indie itself became indie became a genre,
right?
As opposed to, you know, as opposed to just alternative, which was a huge amalgam mess genre anyway.
Right. Kind of alternative was also kind of a parody of itself, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Here's the alternative to what you're listening to that we're pushing on you.
Yes. Everything is an alternative to something else. Yes.
Right. Yeah. 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 What was, I cannot think of the name of the song. It's called like, it's going to drive me nuts. But there was a song where the singer is talking about forming the ultimate like Seattle grunge punk band. And okay. then they were the band that didn't play because silence is music's original alternative. yeah. The guy's name was Todd Snyder. Yeah, he's famous for his song Beer Run, but he did have a song it was called The Talking Seattle Grunge Rock Blues. And that's what it was. It was about the band that wouldn't play because silence is music's original alternative.
Yes, yes.
And then they were eventually pushed out of a scene by the band that wasn't even together.
Whoa.
Because the alternative to a band is not a band.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was that was that whole that anti-establishment movement really that kicked, you know, that became more mainstream with grunge and then into the punk push in the mid to late 90s. That's relevant. Yes.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it and that was it though, because you sort of had that underground sort of anti-establishment thing that eventually got kind of absorbed into the establishment, and then it hated itself for being absorbed into the establishment, right. And then it just got all weird and then it went away.
Yeah, yeah. It's just kind of mocking the basically Kurt Cobain and Eddie Vedder's response to instant fame.
Right.
Anything else we want to cover on this?
Not really, unless you have a lot more to talk about, you know, kind of because you're seeing more of the local music scene now.
Uh-huh.
You know, unless you have anything to really say about that and kind of what's going on and how it's growing from like an inside perspective. Because, I see the outside.
Well, the music scene, it tends to ebb and flow, where you'll have, a burst come out together and there'll be a flourishing scene for 2 or 3 years, and then it'll kind of flow back and there won't be anything for another 2 or 3 years. And then, then the people that were influenced by the last scene will bust out a couple years later. It's hard to get a gauge on any local scene, really. Right now it's going strong in Greenville. There's a lot of different influences being pulled in. You end up with house shows with large genre splits almost.
But to me, that's good.
But they're all sprouting out of the same scene, so they kind of have similar sensibilities, so they fit together.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting to see the interplay between bands that, ostensibly on the first listen aren't really related. But if you hear them live and kind of back to back, you can hear connections that you wouldn't necessarily hear otherwise.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of like, they're cousins. They're from the same family. They maybe have the same value. Right. They're from the same place, but they may not be the same people.
Right. Right.
Yeah. That's cool. It's as someone going to a show, I actually enjoy when there are different genres of music being played, because it keeps everything from kind of just beiging together in this, mm-hmm. Kind of blob of whatever genre it is I'm listening to at this show.
Right.
Because I know I went, think I went to see Flogging Molly.
Yeah.
And it was one of the Irish punk bands. And the band they had opening for them was this like marimbe and drums and guitar band. It sounded completely different from anything else on the show. And it was just, it was wild because this isn't what you came to hear.
One of these things is not like the other, but
right. And then the next band, yeah, the next band was like a punk folk band.
Okay.
Which was awesome. And it was completely different. And then of course you had the headliner that you came to see, but it was really nice to get three kind of distinct, different, you know, sounds.
So they almost went for the ethnic punk.
yeah.
It's, genre.
Right. Yeah. We're just trying to hit a little bit of everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, but that's good. Because I mean, inevitably those bands all have their own fans. So, you know, they can kind of all intermingle and see everybody else. And maybe you pick up a little bit from them and everybody gets more popular.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, a lot of times if you're going to see a hard rock band with a hard rock opener, you've probably heard the opener, you know. Yeah. So you're at least aware of them. And if you liked them, you'd be listening to them.
There is that.
I mean, but, it's true. It's not so much now that you have, you know, so little radio airplay.
Right.
You know,
now it's just some band trying to get you to listen to them on Spotify. Come on.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, like six or seven years ago, I saw like The Sword open up for Clutch and I had never heard of them before and I really enjoyed them. But very rarely do I hear an opening band and I'm like, all right, cool. I like them almost as much as the band I came to see.
Well, we went down to Savannah in must have been 2005 2006, sometime in that time frame, and to see Ben Folds at SCAD, at the auditorium at SCAD, and the opening band we had never heard of, and they had just come out with a CD that they were starting to push, and they opened for Ben Folds, and that was the first time I ever heard The Fray.
Which is funny because I guarantee you it was probably because that was what probably 2006, 2005. Yeah,
it was right when that CD came out is when I saw them.
Okay.
So whenever that was,
I guarantee you within probably a week of that, we were me and a couple of my friends were at the Windjammer at Isle of Palms. And this band was playing that we had never heard of before. They had started playing their song on the radio on like 96 Wave, which is our little kind of independent rock station, pirate radio kind of thing. Yeah. And I liked their song and we went to see them and that was The Fray. And then within like a week, Cable Car was number one and they were like the hottest thing going.
Yeah. Yeah.
And here we are seeing them at the Windjammer.
We both hit that Fray wave before it hit. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, here we are listening to him at the Windjammer where there's 75 people there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's quiet enough to where you can actually, like, talk to your neighbor.
Yeah.
And, you know, talk to the bartender about what you want over the music, you know. So it was just very weird.
Yeah, we saw him in you know, literally the School of Art and Design's, you know, little auditorium with Ben Folds, which was an amazing show.
I'm sure Ben Folds at a like music school type of like acoustic building would be awesome.
Yeah, and that was when he would still do Bitches Ain't Shit live.
Unironically,
and somehow his drummer sounds like Snoop.
That's cool.
Live, not so much on the recording, but live he sounds like Snoop. So
nice. But yeah, they've I don't know, it is cool occasionally to see bands like that. I saw Avenged Sevenfold like that. I was actually talking to my friend Andrew who was in a punk band around 2005-06 whenever, and they were playing on the Warped Tour before I knew him, and on this like little stage that I swear was nothing more than a bunch of tables like pushed together really close.
Yeah.
On like the ninth stage at Warped Tour.
It will collapse. Yes.
Yeah. I distinctly remember seeing Avenged Sevenfold play like 3 years before they got popular. And I was like, wow, this band actually isn't like, they're just messy.
Yes. Very.
Like they should really clean their shit up. And apparently they heeded my advice that I never told them. They cleaned their shit up and they were decent.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's I don't know. That is one thing that I will miss about Warped Tour not being around, and, you know, the kind of downfall of these bigger music festivals,
right,
is that you don't get to always discover new people and see new acts.
Yeah.
Because every year I've gone to Warped Tour, I found a new band that I liked.
Right. And now you have, what, Bonnaroo and, you know, and...
Yeah, but I mean, even like Shaky Knees down here and whatever the festival is they're doing in like 2 weeks.
But you don't have a touring festival like we used to have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, even those, though, mainly it's the big acts.
Right.
You know, the biggest band at those festivals are by far bigger than any band that's ever played on Warped Tour when they played on Warped Tour.
Right. Right.
You know. Plus, there's not really a spot for small bands to have a stage at a venue like that.
Right. Yeah.
So we need something like that, but I guess it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah, that's not a thing that anybody's looking to spend money on anymore. So,
well, apparently that's not even the thing that like millennials ruined. Apparently, like, the generation younger than millennials is what ruined Warped Tour. Like, apparently what they said is like kids don't want to go outside and go to a music like thing anymore. And that the audience for Warped Tour has been steadily increasing to whatever age I currently am. And that's true. I mean, I went last...
came up to meet you. Yay.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Apparently just my group of people, like everybody from like 30 to 38 now, are the people that used to go to Warped Tour in 2000 and are still going to Warped Tour in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. Same people. You know?
No, when I went in 2017, I used to feel like the old guy at Warped Tour for a few years.
Yeah.
Except the last couple of years I went, it was just everybody was my age. You know, we were at the GWAR show. There weren't kids seeing GWAR. It was everybody that was in their 30s, 40s, you know, 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, who remember GWAR on Beavis and Butthead back in the 90s. But yeah.
And I guess we can cut off there. Do you have any ideas for next time, or am I picking again?
Yeah, pick again.
Okay. It's on Netflix, so and we haven't talked about it. Let's go with Dead Poets Society. Give us plenty to talk about. And let's see here. If you're in the Greenville area, you can come out to the Radio Room on Saturday and see one of these large band showcase things that we've been talking about, and I'm playing in it. So Radio Room starting at 6 o'clock on Saturday for Band Camp 4, which is seven bands.
What time are you guys playing?
Huh?
What time are you guys playing on that
show? We are opening it up 6 to 6:30 sometime.
Okay, cool. I will try to get my wife to come to that, because I'll be home this weekend. I'm claimed on a like first shift Monday through Friday, or second shift Monday through Friday job. So
okay.
I will try to get my wife to come to that.
There you go. That's cool.
Yeah. Everybody else should come too. Come to the show.
Everybody else can come too. It doesn't have to just be Joe. No. And I am at revelator.rocks on Instagram and at r3v3l8r on Twitter. And you can find us on Facebook as Black Market Toast. And you are...
I'm That Joe You Know on Instagram.
Okay. And we will talk at y'all next time. Tear down, waste time.